Hello, this is Karen Fresco with the News Gazette, dated Wednesday, August 8, 2018. We will begin today's reading on the front page with the article headlined, Champaign City Council, Officers' Honorary Street Designations Restored. 10-year limit will no longer apply to city employees who died on job. By Natalie Wickman, Champaign. The Champaign Police Department badge carries two stars, each dating back more than 50 years. They represent the only department officers killed on duty, Thomas Dodsworth in 1916 and Robert L. Tatman in 1967. If those stars last the test of time, retired officer Mark Medlin said, then honorary street designations should do the same. The Champaign City Council decided to heed this recommendation Tuesday, unanimously voting to make honorary street designations permanent for city employees who lose their lives in the line of duty. And from now on, designations for city employees will no longer count toward the limit of 4 per year. Both Tatman and Dodsworth had honorary street designations, but they lasted only from 2005 to 2015, under the previous regulations. The Tatman family still remembers that day. It's still a memory they shouldn't have, Medlin said. Tatman was fatally shot with his service revolver, leaving behind a wife and 4 children. And the identity of his killer is a mystery yet to be solved. Dodsworth was killed in a bootlegging raid. Councilman Will Kyle said Tuesday's change has got him thinking about the expiration date on other designations. As new generations come and go, you forget about people who paved the way for your community and made it better, he said. After speaking with Medlin at an event honoring Tatman last November, Councilman Greg Stock brought the change up with the city. I'm not really going to take credit. It was the legal department's hard work, he said. I'm glad we're able to do it. I felt it was an easy fix. The designations for Tatman and Dodsworth will be restored at their original locations, with Tatman's on University Avenue between Chestnut and First Streets, and Dodsworth's on First Street between University and Park Avenues. In other business, the council voted Tuesday to allow restaurants to serve alcohol outdoors at any time they're open Saturdays and Sundays. The city formerly prohibited outdoor service until 11 a.m. and noon, respectively. Both restaurant owners and patrons asked the city for this change, which will mainly affect brunch offerings. The owners of Watson's Shack and Rail, Big Grove Tavern, and Radio Maria said that even only a few more hours to serve alcohol outside will significantly impact revenue. Back to page 1. Glen Park, just peaceful. Creation of pond with gazebo, waterfall, transforms space into mini oasis. Champaign by Anthony Zillis. Robert Counts took a seat on the rock next to the cascading waterfall at Glen Park early Monday evening as he looked off into a pond filled with around a dozen ducks. A few people walked by, mostly with their dogs scampering beside them. A few bicyclists coasted past. But to Counts, it was as if he was alone as he sang along to the music blasting from his earbuds. It's just peaceful, he said. It's beautiful on the water. It's just relaxation. Sometimes when he arrives for work at Wirco, the steel mill directly north of the park, at 4:30 in the morning, he finds himself lingering, wanting to soak in the beauty of the park for a few seconds more as the streetlights along the path glow. Just a matter of months ago, Counts wouldn't have found himself lingering in this area, even though he lives a few blocks away and works nearby. He and fellow employees and neighbors watched as the park was transformed over the past few years from a drab strip of houses and buildings with a small basketball court into a serene body of water complete with a gazebo, a waterfall, and a path that encircles the pond. "I've seen it from scratch," Count said. "It's pretty remarkable. Very nice setting. It's very beautiful, and it accommodates this area very well. It's very peaceful, and it's just somewhere to get away." Valerie Garcia carried a bag of stale bread on Monday, which she'd used to feed the ducks that drifted around the pond as she and her son, Nicholas Taylor, walked their dog, Otis. Taylor regularly walks to various places around Champaign late at night, but he tried to avoid the Glen Park area before the renovation. Now he feels safer strolling around the park with lights illuminating the path and security cameras overhead. "It does make me feel a lot safer to come here at night," Taylor said. Conspicuously absent are the geese that flock to other area retention ponds, and that's intentional. Green fencing lines the pond's edge, which keeps geese from taking their goslings into the water, said Ed Wachala, a neighbor and member of the steering committee that helped design the park. "When the geese discover this, they don't return." In the midst of the beauty and utility, a few drawbacks exist. Tall trees used to line the area in front of the steel mill and the craft plant, blocking them from the neighborhood's view. Those were cut down and replaced with new, much younger trees to make room for the pond. Access to Mattis Avenue is more difficult for residents who live east of the park because the westbound one-way road along its north side was eliminated. However, with that comes the benefit of far less pass-through traffic. And that's not the only positive. "It's incredible," Wachala said. "People are out here using it. It's just a phenomenal project. It turned out better than I think a lot of us thought it could." On a typical day, only a few people at a time stroll around the park, which still enjoys a relatively unknown existence. But in the last few months, Wachala has seen something he's rarely seen before. People walking up from the south to use the park, sometimes congregating for parties. In the months and years ahead, he thinks there will be more visitors to come. "It's kind of a go-to destination for people," Wachala said as he played fetch with his dog. "And people still don't really know about it. When people know about it, it'll be even busier than it is now. It's terrific." One-on-one, Urbana's new principle, a passion for education. These days, you can catch Dolores Brown in her office. It's now the one marked principal at Urbana High School. Or, for the occasional special occasion, on the court, where the former three-sport high school athlete still likes to play a pickup game now and again, especially if it's with students. "Maybe on a special Friday, I'll come and play with them," she says. "I think I could play any sport. Badminton, tennis, you name it." Tuesday night, the part-time athlete and full-time educator received the Urbana School Board's approval to fill the high school principal vacancy created by Matt Stark's departure in late May. Just prior, the Illinois State grad and recent Stephen Decatur Middle School principal sat down to talk all things Urbana and how she got the job in the first place with staff writer Lindsay Jones. Hired away from Decatur in June to be Urbana High's next vice principal, Dolores Brown has already been promoted to the top job at the school, Staff writer Lindsay Jones caught up with Matt Start's successor before she was formally approved Tuesday night as Urbana's new principal. What inspired you to be an educator? I've always had a passion for education and children. My parents were very involved in my education experience. I had five other siblings, and my parents were Cub Scout and Girl Scout leaders. My mother serves as a regional secretary of the National Parent Teacher Association to this day. It seemed like a natural profession to join. What brought you to Urbana? Honestly, the real commitment to equity and what we're doing in regards to restorative practices and making sure all students have an equitable experience. I've always watched the job postings around Champaign-Urbana because I'm aware of the innovation and the bold move the district is making in regards to equity. You don't see that everywhere. What's been the biggest surprise so far? The real passion and community that all the stakeholders have. I'm amazed at the dedication of the staff. They're dedicated to making sure all students have an equitable learning experience. Everybody is on board, which makes it all a little easier. What are your plans for the first year? I want to build upon what's already here. It's really to build those relationships and enlarge opportunities for students. I'll be looking at enlarging dual credit and increasing grad rates. My goal is to make sure we do reach our school improvement goals. How is your time spent outside of work? With my family and my friends. I stay busy. I do a lot of reading and research. I'm a reflective practitioner, so I'm always seeing how I can be better in any area. I love to travel. I've been to California a few times. I love the wine country. Temecula, Napa Valley. My favorite place has been St. Thomas in the Virgin Islands. I've been to England, France, and Dublin. That international experience definitely helps with my educational philosophy. What's something that might surprise students to learn about you? I was a three-sport athlete in high school. I played basketball, softball, and volleyball. Sometimes I play with the kids. When the NBA season starts, I watch that, but I don't really follow one team. I usually root for the underdog. I also used to play an instrument. I was well-versed, so I understand creating and supporting these opportunities for students. From the local section? Just kicking it. Champaign County Board. Facilities Sidewalk on the Way by Tim Mitchell, Urbana. The Champaign County Board is taking the first steps towards building a sidewalk to serve people walking to the Champaign County Nursing Home and the Brookins Administrative Center. Back in May, the board agreed to sell the financially challenged nursing home to Extended Care Clinical LLC and Altitude Health Services, Inc., both headquartered in Evanston, for $11 million. But in order to have the nursing home property available for sale, a plat revision needed approval by the City of Urbana. As part of that revision, the city requested that the county build a sidewalk along Art Bartell Road between South Learman Avenue and Main Street, Urbana, according to County Facilities Director Dana Brenner. The county agreed to the request. On Tuesday night, the County Facilities Committee voted 6-0 to recommend hiring a civil engineer architect to plan the sidewalk. Brenner said the engineer architect would take into consideration possible future widening of the street, curbing work, and drainage work over the next 10 years in determining an appropriate place to put the sidewalk. Brenner said, "The City of Urbana is giving the county until July 27, 2020 to complete construction of the new sidewalk. If the county doesn't build a sidewalk within that time, the city will build it and charge the county for its construction. The sidewalk will cost the county an estimated $300,000, Brenner said. He anticipates it would take about 3 months to complete the project, which could be built sometime in 2019. News Gazette Media's podcast series, Legally Speaking. Mary Schenck, who has been covering crime and courts for more than 35 years, chats with the headline makers on her beat. To hear the podcast in full, visit news-gazette.com. As a young girl in Champaign, Lisa Little listened as her mother answered Champaign County's first domestic violence hotline one night a week on the home phone. Don't be misled by her last name. Today, Little is a force to be reckoned with as a court advocate for women seeking judicial protection from abusers. On this week's episode of Legally Speaking, Little talks about the nature of domestic violence and her work with Urbana-based Courage Connection, a social service agency that caters to victims abused by people they once really loved. Here are a few highlights from their conversation. Is all domestic violence violent? A great deal of intimate partner abuse is about the emotional and psychological abuse, the controlling, the stalking with technology, the insults, and going through people's phones. Those types of things that really aren't illegal, but are extremely harassing and get in the way of living your daily life. Why would any woman tolerate being abused, physically or mentally? Leaving is a process. It's not an event. Many people think an incident happens, she's done, she's gone, everything ends at that point. But for survivors, there are so many other things to think about. And at the bottom, she's not in that relationship because she hates him. She loves him. There's still love that we have to deal with, and the guilt. Most victims have been led to believe the abuse is their fault. So getting through that mindset can be difficult. Who are these abusers? Do they fit a profile? Anybody. Domestic violence knows no economic, racial, demographic, global boundaries. It is the same prevalence with wealthy families as with poor families, educated and uneducated, rural and urban. It doesn't matter. It's one in four women. It's one in four relationships. Area updates. Home to turbine distance stretched. Paxton. The Ford County Board Zoning Committee finalized a package of proposed changes to the county's ordinance regulating wind farms Tuesday morning, including a proposal to more than double the distance that wind turbines must be from homes. For much of the spring and summer, committee members seemed comfortable with a proposal to increase the existing 1,000-foot setback between wind turbines and primary structures such as homes to 1,500 feet. However, when the committee voted Tuesday on whether to send the package of proposed changes, which included the 1,500-foot setback, to the county's Plan Commission and Zoning Board of Appeals, the measure failed by a 3-2 vote. The committee then revoted on a proposed ordinance to include a setback of 2,250 feet from the primary structures, or four times a turbine's tip height, whichever is greater. The amended proposal was approved unanimously. Committee members Jean May, Randy Ferguson, and Matt Rock voted against the 1,500-foot setback. Voting in favor of it were Randy Berger and Dave Hastings. As a compromise, Ferguson said he wanted to see the setback be somewhere between 1,500 feet and the 3,250 that some residents had requested. I know the shadow flicker turbines can cause would drive me insane, he said. Joanne Fetzger, an advocate for greater setbacks, said the proposed 2,250-foot setback is not a victory, but we're moving in the right direction. Aaron Baker, a senior development manager for Apex Clean Energy, appeared taken aback by the proposed 2,250-foot setback. Baker said her company has already spent $2.5 million developing the Ford Ridge Wind Farm, a proposed wind energy project in the Gibson City and Sibley area. The company is doing reconstruction surveying and had hoped to break ground in spring 2019, Baker said. But whether the wind farm moves forward under the proposed changes remains to be seen. We'll need to take a look, Baker said. We'll have to do our due diligence. That article by Carol Filmoni, in a News Gazette correspondent. Rantoul Township High School. SRO is heading to Florida. Rantoul. Rantoul's school resource officer will head to Parkland, Florida this week to learn more about the February shooting that left 17 dead at Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School. It's just the latest trip like this Curtis Buckley, who has visited several other sites where school shootings have occurred, including Paducah, Kentucky, Chardon, Ohio, and Normal. It's my way of learning from experiences and bringing back some information that we can use lessons learned, said Buckley, who is about to start his ninth year as SRO at Rantoul Township High. Buckley provides training for teachers for active shooter incidents and other emergencies. It's easier to visualize how to take action in an emergency if drills are conducted, he said. We put these teachers in the positions to decide how they are going to respond, he said, adding that a primary role of a teacher is to be a leader. When a crisis occurs, students are going to look to an adult for guidance. Is the teacher going to cower under a table or in a corner or actively prepare themselves if an emergency happens, to have that warrior mindset, he said. These emergencies are not scripted, so we have to prepare personnel the best we can for any situation. Rantoul's SRO wants feedback from students and staff if they see something that might indicate someone is planning violence. Superintendent Scott Amerio noted it was students who alerted school officials that someone on Facebook had threatened to plant a bomb at the school in 2016, which led to the person's arrest. Police traced the threat to a Rantoul teen who had never been a student at RTHS, and he was subsequently sentenced to prison. Buckley said he is also given a lot of suspicious artwork by teachers that students have drawn. Several years ago, we had a picture brought to my attention from a student, Buckley said. In talking with him, he had homicidal thoughts. Because of a teacher, we were able to get that student the help that he needed. Buckley said he is not in favor of arming teachers. If a person in a school is law enforcement trained and there's liabilities covered for the schools, I'm okay with that, he said. As far as arming of teachers, I think that's the worst mistake a school district could make. That article by Dave Hinton, in the Rantoul Press. OSF Healthcare, new drug disposals added. OSF Healthcare has added drug disposal drop boxes at both its hospitals in Urbana and Danville. Both secure boxes are available in the main lobby areas of the hospitals from 6 a.m. to 8 p.m. at OSF Heart of Mary Medical Center and from 6 a.m. to 8:30 p.m. at OSF Sacred Heart Medical Center. The boxes are for unwanted, expired, and leftover prescription and over-the-counter medications. The boxes don't accept needles or sharps, liquids such as lotions and ointments, inhalers, aerosol cans, IV bags, and tubes or thermometers. OSF now has drug disposal sites at all 12 of its Illinois hospitals. Getting unneeded drugs out of the house and into secure disposal boxes is advised to help keep them out of the hands of prescription drug abusers and protect children and pets from accidental ingestion. That article by Deborah Pressey. The final task in the village of DeLand's water system upgrade, the tearing down of the old water tower, is nearly complete. The tower is down, and debris will soon be hauled off. Since the tower included some lead-based paint, soil will also be hauled away and replaced. Village of DeLand. Last meeting for President. DeLand. As DeLand's $2.333 million water project wraps up, so does the tenure of George Long, who presided over his last meeting of the village board this week. Long, who will move to Savoy this weekend, gave notice in April that his last meeting as president would be in August. Board member Todd Benting was voted in as acting village president. Long had recommended Bill Schmidt for the post, but board members opted for Benting since he had filled that role before. "I've done it before, so I already know what the job entails," said Benting, who has been on the village board since 2012 and served as acting president between November of 2013 and May of 2015. "I'm glad to do it again." Long had already been a village board member when he followed Benting as acting president in 2015, then was elected as president 2 years later. Although he called the job somewhat thankless, Long said he was proud of DeLand residents for helping fund the water system upgrade. "They stepped up when we had to implement the capital improvement fee of $35 a month, and I thought we'd have a lot more complaints than we did. If it wasn't for the residents here, we wouldn't have the water project." That effort, which included drilling 2 wells into the Mahomet Aquifer 5 miles outside of town and piping water into the village, is nearly complete. That article by Steve Hoffman of the Piatt County Journal-Republican. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the News Gazette, dated Wednesday, August 8, 2018. Please stay tuned.